Today's guest is the co-founder of Ritual Chocolate, a bean-to-bar company that started in a cramped Colorado apartment with a hacked-together chocolate lab and a big dream. With no formal culinary background, but a deep frustration with low-quality, opaque chocolate, they set out to rethink everything from sourcing to machinery to flavor. That experiment has grown to a Utah-based factory and cafe, making award-winning bars from carefully sourced cacao, all while staying fiercely committed to transparency and craft. We're going to talk about how Ritual grew from hair dryers and tabletop grinders to a full chocolate factory and what it really takes to build a values-driven chocolate company in a crowded market. Co-founder and president of Ritual Chocolate, Anna Sear, is with us in studio. Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Right on. So for listeners who have never heard of Ritual Chocolate, how do you describe what you do and what makes your chocolate different from what they'd find at a typical grocery store?
Well, absolutely. Well, when I first got into chocolate, just to back up a little bit, I discovered pretty early on in my research that pretty much all the chocolate that's on the grocery shelf isn't made by that company. So people will buy chocolate from, you know, larger chocolate companies, and then they'll melt it down, remold, do cool things with it, but they're not making the chocolate from the cacao bean and doing that sourcing. So one of the things that got me really excited early on was doing the whole process. So for us, we're called a bean-to-bar chocolate company. So we source cacao beans from all over the world. So Belize, Madagascar, Peru, Ecuador, and these are all, you know, heirloom varieties that have unique flavor profiles. And that's what got us really excited in the beginning, because I always thought chocolate had one flavor, right? Mm-hmm. All the chocolate you taste growing up and on the grocery shelf, it's got that sort of base flavor. It's not bad. I mean, chocolate is sweet, it's sugary. But when I was starting to try these single origins and these different beans, you get fruits and nuts and this complexity that it's like coffee or wine. And so it was something that we really wanted to share with people. So, so not only do we do the whole chocolate making process, but we're sourcing from farms that are really doing amazing things with their beans, with flavor, but also have great sustainable practices. So we're paying well and above fair trade price for our beans. And also the farm itself is good for the environment and biodiversity. So
the cacao farm itself is good for that.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. So that was one thing. So before we started Ritual, we went down to a cacao farm in Costa Rica. And that was really a point where things clicked for me, because it was like this full ecosystem habitat for animals. It was a sloth preserve. So these sloths hanging out in trees, caiman alligators, birds. It was just this cacophony of sort of sound and life. And I thought, this is, you know, this growing of this fruit, this is something I can get behind and feel good about. But then right next to these cacao plantations, they're growing pineapple, they're growing bananas, and it was like desolate. It's really sad. There's just nothing living there. Of course, there's pesticides. And I thought, I really want to put my time into something I can really feel good about from start to finish. So that was a big part of the puzzle.
Now, all the locations where you source your cacao, have you traveled there, like Madagascar and Peru and Ecuador?
Yeah, I haven't been to Madagascar, I have to say, but we've been to Peru, we've been to Belize, we sourced from Costa Rica. So I wish I could go, have more time to go down, but I'm oftentimes stuck in the chocolate factory.
Yeah, you're running a business.
But the wonderful thing is that you can still be so connected to the farms. You know, you can Zoom call with them and try samples and really have that open dialogue, which is the important thing for building that relationship.
Now, did you grow up eating chocolate?
Oh, of course I did, as everyone does. I grew up in the UK, and so I did grow up on Cadbury's. So, and there's nothing wrong with Cadbury's, Hershey's, it's wonderful. Like, what I love about chocolate is that everyone has their childhood memories that, you know, it's got this sort of nostalgia and just bring people joy and connect people. So I love that. So, you know, we're not trying to be snooty about chocolate. We want it to be approachable. We're just trying to share that how you can kind of look at chocolate in a different way, and you can develop your palate if you want, but there's nothing wrong with having a Snickers bar or
There you go. I like that idea. Yeah. Now, neither you nor your co-founder came from a traditional culinary or corporate chocolate background. How did that outsider status help you, and where did it make things harder?
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because, you know, we were pretty young when we started. We started the company in Colorado. We eventually rented this factory in Denver with all this like amazing old European antique equipment. So we were learning really how to make chocolate from like 100 years ago and kind of going back to basics. But the amazing thing about the chocolate making, the bean to bar process, is certainly at the time there wasn't a school you could go to for it. You really had to piece it together yourself, talk to people here and there that are dabbling in it. But what's so cool about the craft chocolate movement is everyone kind of puts their own take on it. So it's very experimental. You know, there's amazing chocolate makers that have culinary backgrounds and they bring that into it. But you have other people making incredible chocolate that don't at all. And so I think it just kind of gives you the ability to kind of focus in on what excites you. So I think for us, we started small. We loved honing the craft. I mean, really the first 5 years, we were just in the factory, just developing products, like figuring out how to get the best texture and get the best flavor out of the beans with the roast. So we just really did a deep dive into that.
Yeah. No, you source the cacao beans, which are like the size of a coconut.
So the cacao pods are the fruit that grows on the tree, and they grow around the trunk of the tree, which is really interesting. And there's about 20 to 40 beans in a pod, so oh. Seeds of the fruit. So the cacao beans are actually the seeds of the fruit. And so they're harvested on the farm, and they pull the beans out, the seeds, and then they're fermented for about 7 days. Kind of depends on the variety and how it's done on the farm. And that's really important to bring about the precursors for the chocolate flavor. So I always think it's so funny to tell people that, because no one thinks of chocolate as a fermented food, but no. It is. It has to be fermented, those beans. And then they're sun-dried like coffee. So there's kind of slow sun-drying method. And then once they're below a certain moisture content and ready to go, they're bagged up in the big burlap sacks and then sent to us.
Just like coffee.
Yeah, okay, just like
good.
Coffee.
Good. Mm-hmm. Before we continue into more questions about the business and operations, Valentine's Day is coming up. So now, do you have anything special planned at Ritual for all of us to go in there and get our chocolate for our Valentine's? What do you have special for us sitting there?
Yeah, well, we do have a truffle class that we're doing on the 12th where you can actually go in and hand roll your own truffles. It's a really fun class, and it's very hands-on. You learn about the chocolate making process, and you'll kind of get to see the factory and try a lot of our chocolate, but then you'll get to hand roll truffles and pick out different ingredients. So I definitely recommend that. That's really fun, and that's a reoccurring class, but it's just a fun one to do before Valentine's. Of course. And then product wise, we have these beautiful 3-bar bundles that have this sort of beautiful gift wrapped belly band. It's gold foil. So that's just a really, really fun one. And we have our Valentine's gift box that has our chocolate covered cherries. And these cherries are from Payson fruit growers that they have orchards like an hour from our factory. And it's the Montmorency Utah tart cherries. Oh, they're such a beautiful flavor. And we coat them in a vanilla dark chocolate. So they're pretty magical, I have
Holy
to say.
Holy cow.
And then so we have that in the box with the little bar bundle pack. So that's a pretty, pretty nice box if you want to hit the spot for your Valentine, I'm just saying.
And how can they get it?
Yes. So you can buy it on our website. It's ritualchocolate.com. Or you can pop into our Heber Cafe. Drop by anytime. We're open every day, 8 to 5 and 9 to 3 on Sundays.
So if they're running late, and it is the 14th, they can just pop by and get it.
Yeah. Yes, we will be fully stocked.
Good.
Right up until the last 5
moment. 5 p.m. on the 14th.
So, yep.
Are you going to stay open late on that day at all, maybe?
If we get enough requests, we...
Exactly. Yeah. All right, back to the origins. So I just wanted to know for myself all the Valentine's stuff. Now, what did it take to go from home experiment and rented equipment to a fully-fledged factory and cafe, and then later to your larger facility in Heber City? And what were the big inflection points that you encountered?
Yeah, I mean, gosh... I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of steps to get to where we are today. And, you know, we started, over 15 years ago, which just blows my mind to even say out loud. And, you know, we were just like young kids, really. We were mid-20s. Robbie and I wanted to do something together, put our values into something, and we looked at coffee roasting and all different things. And chocolate came up, and we were like, this would be so fun. So we started researching into it, went down to the cacao farm, and we were just hooked. And we just loved this idea of like changing an industry, because we felt like so much chocolate on the market was really poor quality. And once we tried like single origin with great flavor, we're like, we want to share this with people. And so that was really like the mission for us from the beginning. But of course, we had like no access to funds. And we were just making it at home. We literally had like cobbled together equipment. I mean, we'd put together PVC pipes to remove the shell in our backyard, and tiny little grinder that was going overnight. I mean, it was pretty funny. I don't want to say the chocolate was fantastic in the beginning, but we were just having so much fun with it and sharing it. And then we had the opportunity to rent a chocolate factory in Denver. And it was a weird serendipitous moment, because you don't just find a chocolate factory lying around, you know, and especially one that's like the right size. And it was this like really awesome guy in Denver that was a bit of a mad scientist. And he had, all this antique chocolate equipment that he'd sourced from all over Europe. And he wasn't using it to its full capacity. And he's like, hey, would you guys like to rent my equipment? And so we spent 4.5 years just trying to, hone the craft, figure out our process. I mean, we had one chocolate bar the first year, and I think we had two chocolate bars. You know, we had a Costa Rica bar, a Madagascar bar. And this was back in like 2010 when, I mean, we were trying to sell an $8 chocolate bar, and people just thought we were crazy. And we'd even go to really specialty stores in Boulder, and they were like, we'll try it. But, you know, it's really hard. But once you actually sit people down and get them trying it, then you get the light bulb moment for people. So I think it's tough, because you grow up with what chocolate is, and you're really having to sort of change people's palates a little bit and minds on what the potential of chocolate can be. That it can be considered more of a fine food when you're, you know, sourcing great quality beans. So it took us a while to kind of get our sales going. You know, we were doing it all in the beginning. So making all the chocolate, doing the sales, doing the deliveries. You know, I was doing the bookkeeping, I was filing our taxes, I was doing it all in Denver. And but we were loving it. I mean, we were just figuring it all out. Zero business background. But we felt like something was missing, because we were like, okay, we decided to do this business so we could wake up and be inspired every day, and just, you want to live, you know, your best life and put everything you can into what you're doing. And we, you know, we loved Denver, but we wanted to be in the mountains. We wanted to hop up on trails. We wanted to ski, mountain bike. And so Robbie was from Park City, and it was just something that was in the background all the time of like, if we moved to a mountain town, where would it be? And then we kind of suddenly we set our sights on Park City, and you know, it took us a couple years to figure out how to do it. And so we kind of cobbled things together and moved. And so because we were renting our equipment, it kind of gave us the ability, because we needed to scale up. So we took the plunge and we bought a lot of used equipment, refurbished, and then we moved to the Little Iron Horse location and squashed in there. I mean, that was pretty small for our production. Because the production area was 2,500 square foot, and then we had our little cafe. And like when we first opened, I know we had a buzzing cafe there, but when we first opened, I mean, even our landlords were like, I don't think you should put a cafe here. There's no foot traffic. Like, you know, you got Windy Ridge across the street, but I don't know if this is going to work. But we really wanted a space people could come into. We put windows into the factory so people could see the process. And so, it was slow for the first couple of years. And then I think we kind of got the word out, started doing tours, and it really started to grow. And so, it's taken us a few years to get that momentum. And, of course, we've developed our product line. So I think a lot of it was just refining our process and being efficient. But then also it's refining our product line. So we were very much purists in the beginning. We were only doing single origin bars. That was our thing that we wanted to share. And, you know, we've kind of, I know for me, like through the years, I'm like, chocolate is joyful. People want fun flavors and ingredients in it. It's okay to, you know, to kind of diversify a bit. And so we released our mountain line that we're sourcing ingredients and really picking flavors that are inspired by the mountains here around us. So local cherries, we source local lavender. We have our Opry bar that's, you know, inspired by the, enjoying your having enjoyment after being out on the mountain all day. So it has sparkling white wine and
dried
raspberries. Yeah, that's a top seller for us. So,
So
we've just, taken, you know, thousands of steps, and then we finally took the plunge and expanded into a larger factory beginning of 2020. It was sort of right before COVID hit. I think it was 2019 we moved down there and expanded into a... The factory itself is about 8,000 square foot.
Oh, good.
So
got some room.
Room to grow. But.
So now, if you could walk us through the bean to bar process at Ritual, you know, from how you choose the cacao farms, whether it's Madagascar, Belize, Ecuador, Peru, and then what happens once those beans arrive at your factory?
Yeah, so with sourcing, we've really like to develop long-term relationships with the farms that we work with, so we can really grow with them. So like our Madagascar farm that we work with, I mean, we've been working with them for 12 plus years, 13 years. Same with our Ecuador, it's been, you know, probably 11 years, Belize. But, you know, we try a lot of different beans, and because for us the importance is supporting farms that are doing things really well, and so they have these heirloom varieties that, you know, they're not easy to grow. There's a reason why so many people grow high yielding, like very like resistant to disease cacao that doesn't have good flavor. So these farms are committed to saving these genetics, these strains. And so we really want to support farms that are doing that. But then in turn, it's great for all of us because they have really unique, amazing flavors. So like our Madagascar bar is bright and fruity. Our Ecuador bar is rich and fudgy. And that's all coming from the bean.
Yeah.
And so we really wanted to share that difference. So every bar and bean that we're sourcing, we're really trying to highlight something unique that we can kind of share that story with people.
Staying true to your core philosophy, I assume your core philosophy, as you mentioned, was finding sustainable quality farms. And now you're experimenting. Now, are your lavender, are your cherries the same kind of sustainable farms that you're getting it from?
Yeah, absolutely. So I really feel like with every bar that we're creating and people that we're working with and collaborating with, we really want them to have the kind of same values, mission, and level of quality that we do. And so, like our Honeycomb Toffee Bar, we make the Honeycomb Toffee in-house, which isn't easy, but we do that so that we can use local honey, Hollow Tree honey, that has hives around the Wasatch Range. And he does an amazing job. And that's someone that we want to work with and highlight. So, so we really try to be intentional about every ingredient. We're sourcing organic when we can, where we can, local where we can. The highest quality.
What's something about the day-to-day reality of running Ritual Chocolate that would surprise people?
Well, you know, it's funny because chocolate sounds so romantic, but in a lot of ways, you know, we are manufacturing when it comes down to it. It's not an easy business. And there's a lot of people that go into chocolate making because it's, yeah, you're so passionate about it. But at the end of the day, it's a very hard business. Costs are really high. It's very high labor. You know, we have a lot of people in the back hand wrapping bars. Like, it's very physical work doing chocolate making. You would think it'd be so easy to find someone to do the chocolate making position. It's really hard because people try it for a couple of weeks and they're like, this is too hard on my body. You're lifting buckets above your head. And, you know, so it's really hard. It's quite physical work. And yeah, so I think, you know, the manufacturing side is difficult. And, you know, a lot of the times I want to work on all the fun creative stuff, but I'm stuck thinking about production flow and inventory and cash flow. And, you know, it's all the stuff that you grapple with having a growing small business.
Yeah.
So
now the difficulty of that kind of leads right into this. If there was a piece of advice that you wish someone had told you 15 years ago about this. Like, let's say there's a listener thinking about the same thing. It's like, oh, I want to make my own chocolate. This would be fantastic. What is a piece of advice that you would like to share with that person? Not negative, but just kind of like, hey, take a look at this.
Oh, gosh, that's a really good question. And I think about this a lot because I would have approached things so differently if, you know, if I could do it all again. Not having a business background, I mean, it probably took me 10 times longer to figure certain things out. And I think the hardest thing for me is I'm like, oh, I'll just work harder and kind of do it all. You know, I'll work late to kind of try and figure out this problem. But really, I mean, for me, it's just learning to delegate, and you've really got to build that team around you. Of, you know, people always say it, but finding key people that are better at than you at certain things. I've, especially at this point, I'm still doing so, wearing so many hats in the business, and I'm really trying to get out of that operations management. And so I think if I had to start again, I would have been like, okay, this is what I want to focus on. This is my thing. And I need to start finding people that I can work with and build a team around that, because it is really hard. I mean, 15 years in, and, you know, I oftentimes find myself burnt out because I'm working on all the things that don't light me up, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's such an important thing, because I read early on that, you know, most businesses fail not because of kind of where they are, just the inherent things, but because business owners get sick of it. They get burnt out. They don't find the joy in it anymore. And then they themselves can't keep it going, even if, you know, the business is doing okay. And I think there's so much truth to that. You have to ensure that you're working on the things that keep you passionate about it, because it ain't easy.
Yeah. Do you still find the joy?
I do. I really do. And I have a fantastic team. I feel like we've got such a great culture at Ritual that I have so much fun with the team every day. And that is such an important part of it. So even if we're having a really hard time, like, we had a tough holiday season. This past year has been really hard. Rising cacao costs, tariffs, you know, cash flow's been tight. You guys have heard it all. But the team, we've really, like, come together, and we're scrappy, and, you know, and that keeps it really fun during the hard times. So that's important.
Well, we just spent a little bit of time with Anna Sear from Ritual Chocolate. We learned about the origins and how chocolate's made, all that fun stuff. Anna, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.